Call to order the Conference Committee on House Bill 3013. I will open an informational meeting only and ask, let's see who we have here. Art Schleck, Don Schellenbach, Rich Angstrom, please come forward. Committee members, you'll recall that these three gentlemen were asked to form a work group during the past week and report back to the committee as to an attempt to reach an agreement on the issues. And so what I would like to do, gentlemen, is have each of you respond as to what was your determination, have any issues in your minds been settled, what the differences are, and why we have, at this point, the chair has been advised that we have been unable to reach agreement. I'd like to have your individual opinions as to why. And I'll start with Mr. Schleck. Good morning, Art.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Art Schleck. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties, and I had the pleasure to meet on several occasions with my colleagues to my right, Mr. Schellenberg and Mr. Angstrom. Also, I would like to indicate to the committee that Brian Shipley was of great assistance in the meetings that we did hold at this point over the last few days. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, as you know, there's three major points of discussion: the Beaver State case, the Eugene Sand and Gravel case, and then the concept of establishment of a task force to have a longer look over the interim of this whole issue of mineral aggregate mining. I would suggest to you that progress was made in looking at the Eugene Sand and Gravel issue and also the task force. I was encouraged that the task force composition was, we had all talked about, and I think agreed to expanding the composition of the task force beyond just legislators. And I have not seen final language at this point with regard to that concept, but I think that generally was agreed to. And I look at that as very positive movement on, towards that concept. We did not spend as much time on the Eugene Sand and Gravel, but towards the end there was a concept that was brought forward that was a brief concept that I think had some merit, and when looking at some final language, I think it might get us to the point where the Eugene Sand and Gravel, for at least from the county's perspective, you know, could be addressed in the interim. The bigger problem that we had was with Beaver State, and I offered several different options to try and move both parties towards the center. That appeared to be very difficult. As an example, and moving both parties to the center, both parties have to give a little bit. And we looked at a number of options, and I won't go through those, but let me just give you one very simple one that I think has some merit, again, which would require both sides to give a little. And that concept would be basically to take all the Class 1 and 2 land in the Willamette Valley and say the only way you can get a mining permit is through the Goal 5 process. Other lands would be available. You know, you would have, at this point, both processes available to it. You could either have the conditional use permit, or you could go through the full Goal 5 process at this point. So it would be optional as it is. But that would take, if you will, would require the industry to agree that Class 1 and 2 lands in the valley, the only way you could go through the process would be through Goal 5.
Are you talking about both significant and insignificant sites?
Yes, sir. I'm talking about all Class 1 and 2 soils in the valley.
Okay.
Over 35%, with in the site. going through the Goal 5 process. That would require both sides to give some at this point. I think, and I would continue to bring to the table the suggestion that we do need the conditional use permit process to be available to site mineral aggregate sites, both in the valley for non-significant sites and in the balance of the state of Oregon at this point. And I think I would offer, and I'll let Don speak to that, but I think even the aggregate industry, or well, the aggregate industry and the Farm Bureau both believe that the conditional use permit for non-significant sites, for lands that are not Class 1 and 2, is an option at this point. But it's trying to get over that other hurdle that appears to create, I won't say an impasse, but it's very difficult for the two parties to move towards the center.
In your opinion, is an agreement possible if we were to extend the time?
We have a, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have a, I'll say, a good working relationship. Sometimes we have to agree to disagree, but I think additional time could very well be beneficial as we continue to hopefully examine the opportunities to move, to all parties move towards a common place.
Any committee members have questions?
I get a little bit confused when you were talking about the gravel concept, and I would like you to reiterate what you said.
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, I don't have the that concept in front of me at this point, but I'd be happy to discuss it with you later.
Senator, if I may.
And Brian may want to go through that.
Brian does have this written out as to where things stand on various issues, and we were going to hold that back.
Okay,
Brian,
we'll wait until later.
Well,
I was just wanting his perspective, but we can wait until Brian.
Mr. Chair, I think the other thing that I would just offer, if I might, is the concept of having the task force and to look at these issues, I think, is a very good one, because it's that they are very complex. And I think that what we do immediately to, shall we say, fix either one of these court cases, if it, is going to be revisited by the task force, and there may be other solutions or other ways of addressing them that will come out of this longer discussion.
Art, I had one other question, and that was, you said these issues are complex, and I flashed for a minute on an issue that I hadn't heard, and it certainly shouldn't be part of this particular task force, this conference committee, but in the task force, should we be looking at issues of water and water quality? Because some people have approached us on that. I know they sent Bill or Representative Girard a letter. Sometimes, the documents that we received included letters from the Department of Human Services and so on that talk about the fact or the possibility at least that water can be affected with aggregate sites if we're not careful. Should that be part of a task force discussion, do you think?
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, I think the task force should look at process, the process and procedures, as well as the criteria for siting. And as part of the criteria for siting, you're going to look at issues of groundwater and those kinds of considerations. So I think it's inevitably will come up.
Okay. Thank you, Chairman.
I was I failed to introduce Sandy this morning, who is replacing Ray as our administrator. I'm quite sure we all agree this is a vast improvement. Good morning, Sandy. Thank you. Ray's gone, so we can say anything we want.
Well, I'll be sure to tell Ray when he gets back.
Oh, thanks, Ray.
Well, I agree with you.
Oh, very good. Mr. Schellenberg.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Don Schellenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau. I have to agree with Mr. Schlack on many issues. We don't always agree on all issues, and even now I wouldn't necessarily agree with some of his statements. But
wouldn't expect you to.
Over regarding the time element, more time, yeah, probably the whole interim. is what it's going to take to resolve this issue. I think there are large issues here that can't be resolved in this short time period that we have. It takes a larger discussion, one that's going to involve my members, a lot of them, and their perspective in order to come to a full understanding and full agreement of the issues, the water issue that Senator Shields brought up, yeah, very critical issue. The Beaver State issue, what Beaver State simply said that you can't mine on Class 1 and are on, well, you can do mining on Class 1 and Class 2 if it's a significant resource, but only if it's a certain thickness. The principle that's involved there is that we want to get the most rock while destroying the least amount of farmland. And I think that's a principle that all of us have agreed on. And I think that might be the only thing that we've all agreed on. One other issue, I guess, maybe I think where there's probably some agreement, at least it's not a lot of heartburn, and that's the task force. How is it made up, et cetera. Whatever the issue is there, I think we can resolve that issue. The outstanding part of the Beaver State issue is what you can mine certain Class 1 and Class 2 land. What's the process, what's the criteria under which you decide whether or not other mining occurs on Class 1 and Class 2 land? That's the big issue. And that's one that's going to have to be decided and worked on this interim committee. We've offered some amendments and offered ways to deal with that. We've offered, in fact, we've reduced our requirement. We were providing that on high-value farmland, on the east side, you could mine 10 acres of the best farmland as a conditional use. We've reduced our requirement there from high-value to Class 1, Class 2, prime and unique. That's more acres than what high-value would protect. And then also in the valley, we offered 5 acres as a conditional use on our best farmland. On the dust issue, I'd have to disagree with Mr. Schlack on that issue. I don't think we've come to an agreement on that. I haven't seen anything that would be acceptable to Farm Bureau on that issue. RS 215, 296 is the flexible issue. It's the issue, it's the statute that allows you to determine or allows the parties to determine on a case-by-case basis what is the dust standard for that particular situation. You can't have a universal dust standard. There are 250 crops. You can have some dust on some of them, even within the same crop. I'll just say raspberries for lack of any other berry. If you're fresh marketing that berry, you can't have any dust. If that berry is going to the processing, to the processor, yeah, you can have some dust. So even within the individual crop, you can't set a dust standard unless you determine what the situation is that crop's being grown in, what it's going to be used for. That's where 215, 296, which we currently have, really comes into play. It allows the parties to address that issue based on what are the facts of this particular case. And so we believe that there isn't any problem there that needs to be dealt with. So that's where we are on that issue. Again, I think the overall issue, if we're going to mine our best farmland, we need to do it in a way that we destroy the least amount of it while getting the aggregate that is necessary. And maybe I might say, you know, the term necessary, there's another one. How do you interpret that? I think there's a there are many uses that need rock. Different kinds of rock can be used for the same use. What we would like to encourage is the use of basalt, what we sometimes call quarry rock, use of that where it can be used. Where it's not necessary to use that, where it's not necessary to use the alluvial rock. The issue, there's two types of rock here, basically, the basalt and then the alluvial. And the alluvial is a rock that comes out of the rivers, or is it the former river deposits that now covered over by our best farmland. We would like to reduce the need for the use of that rock to the extent possible. Where you need the rock, where you need that kind of rock, fine. We're not saying you shouldn't have it. We're not saying that farmland shouldn't be mined. Should it be hard to mine our best farmland? Yes. Impossible to mine it? No. That's not where we're coming from. We're looking for that reasonable middle ground there where what's necessary can be done. But we want to make sure that it is necessary when it is done. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions of the committee?
One question. Maybe you're not the right person to ask, Don, but is quarry rock cheaper to get or more expensive?
Would you restate the question, please?
Is quarry rock less expensive or more expensive to extract? I don't know. I was just that hadn't occurred to me before. Just the cost factor.
No, Mr. Chairman, Senator Shields, I'm probably truly not the right person to answer that. I've heard Mr. Engstrom make various statements regarding that, and I'll maybe let you ask him that question.
Okay.
I have my own ideas, but I'm not an expert in that field on the cost of it.
Okay.
Representative Shaw.
Thank you. Good morning, guys. I asked how much farmland in the Willamette Valley was being mined, and I've heard estimates as low as 0.65% of farmland being mined in Willamette Valley. Is that accurate or anywhere near accurate? And the biggest amount I've seen, I think, was below 2%.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Schaffler, I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know whether that's accurate or whether it isn't. There's many factors that you have to look at when you determine what that figure is. Are you talking about quarry land also? Are you talking about land only inside the EFU zone or outside the EFU zone, an interurban growth boundary or some other zone? Are you talking only on Class 1 and Class 2?
Let me tell you.
There's so many different.
All the farmland and then all the quarry, all of mine. That's what I'm talking about. Just forget about all those labels. All the farmland and all the mining. What percentage of it is mining?
Mr. Chairman,
I've got all this information here. So, and just to hear some folks talk, you'd think we were mining the whole valley. And you know, I agree with you on the dust and the water quality and all that. And we should only take up farmland when necessary. Mm-hmm. But right now, we're importing gravel into Clackamas County to improve Sunnyside Road from the state of Washington. Now, I know there's a need and a demand and a necessity for this commodity here in Oregon, and we have it here. And I just somehow hope you all get together and come to some kind of agreement on this, because task force are great, and I would love to continue to have a task force, and I hope I'm on it. I may be asking for more than I want, but in the meantime, we're paying incredible amounts of money to import gravel into the state of Oregon, and in a time when we got no money. So So these figures, and hopefully the task force will address the issue and break it down just the way you want to, too. But I just think if we're only mining 0.65%, I don't think that's unreasonable in a society that where every single person in the society in our community is using gravel.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Schaffler, I'm going to read into your final comments there continue to lead me to believe that your thought process is, as you were indicating, this is a minuscule amount. Why are we even worrying about this?
I'm worried.
And the why we're worried about this, we're in an EFU zone. The land here is farmland. It's protected for farming. That's the purpose, primary purpose of this zone. When we created EFU zones, there were seven permitted and conditional uses that were allowed in the EFU zone. Today, there are 50. When this legislature gets done, there will probably be 51. That'll probably be the satellite sheriff's offices will be number 51. The point is there's an accumulation of uses that take farmland out of farm production. Yes, aggregate is one part of it. Some small part of it. You put a whole bunch of small parts together, and pretty soon you're affecting the agricultural infrastructure that has to be there in order for all farmers to operate.
Thank you.
Mike, as a point of information, I believe the information that Representative Schaffler was referring to was made available by the Oregon State University Extension Office. That's where that information came from, Don. So, Senator?
I would like a clarification. I've heard the 0.65 reference. I would like a clarification, though, what percent of land inside EFU zones, and what percent of Class 1 and Class 2 soils we're taking. I mean, if the Extension Office has that, if OSU has that, I would like that breakdown, because I think that's significant information.
Mm-hmm. Good morning, Mr. Angstrom.
Good morning. Rich Angstrom, just about said a state agency. That's how tired I am. Oregon Concrete and Aggregate Producers Association. I think Don hit it right there at the end of what the major philosophical debate is, and that is that the farm community looks at the EFU land as their farmland, and the aggregate industry, another natural resource industry, always is going to have to be in farm and forest lands by definition of what we do, and we're a resource industry also. And the problem is the way the law works is that we're a natural resource industry without really a designated home. And what we're trying to fight for is having a designated home for ourselves. And the issue really isn't with the forestry folks, but because of the pressures on farmland that Don really feels, this is just one of the other battle areas that they feel they have to fight to protect farmland. So there's really a fairly significant philosophical divide between us, because we feel from our side that, I think you've heard at the beginning of the session, OCAPA saying it's not grown, it's mined. All the natural resources, it's either grown or it's mined. And if you look around this room, that certainly plays into that. We do agree and support the notion that we want to destroy, I suppose that's not the right word, but disturb the least amount of farmland. I was actually wrote down your quote, and I should have rephrased it, to disturb the least amount of farmland for the most aggregate. And God played a kind of a cruel joke on all of us. He said that the best farmland, Class 1 and 2 soils, is going to have the most amount of aggregate underneath it, and so that is what happens out in the real world. Is what this is a fight over the floodplain, and The way gravels are deposited, the majority of gravels are deposited where you can get to that particular philosophy is going to be in the floodplain. And because of the millions of years ago, the glacial action and the constant movement of rocks downstream, that's where they're going to accumulate. And those are where the deepest deposits are. So if we're going to disturb the least amount of farmland, we're going to have to be on those in those particular areas, because that's where most of the rock is. It's also where Class 1 and 2 soils are. I think this issue boils down at this point. We have ranges of agreement here and disagreement depending on all the different parties. But I think we've settled in on the Eugene sand and gravel issue, and I'm not saying everybody, but I think there's by and large a fairly large consensus, and there's a new language that Brian showed us yesterday on the Eugene sand and gravel language, and we're okay with that. There's some language on modifying the policy statement that helps capture the issue of disturbing the least amount of farmland for the most aggregate that the industry is now supportive of. The Beaver State fix, Mr. Schlack and I have agreement on that. I know Art. Don does not. The task force, I think there's substantial agreement on that. I think we've the Dash 7s meet, from what the folks in the state are telling me, meet the governor's criteria at this point. But the issue is this. In the Dash 7s, number 5s, section 5, what we're saying in that is the least amount, or what we're saying is, just to kind of recapture that, if you're greater than 35% Class 1 and 2 soils, you can't mine unless you're 2 million tons or more in the valley, or 100,000 tons or more outside of the valley. And what the Farm Bureau and the Thousand Friends side of that is, that particular discussion is, what assures us that we're not going to go out there and disturb a whole lot of aggregate land with very little return, basically that we don't fully utilize that particular deposit to the greatest or maximum extent possible. And we've tried to describe how market forces work, and that is simply the industry would not go through the trouble of siting an aggregate site, setting up all that equipment with crushers and sand separators, conveyor systems, ready mix plants, all of that capital on a site without fully utilizing the site. There's a level of trust issue here that folks want to assure that we don't go out and basically kind of cream the top lift of aggregate and then move to another site and leave a bunch of deposit. And it's hard to write good business into law, you know, being a good businessman into law. But what I can say on that particular issue, because that seems to be the root of the disagreement right now, and Art proposed a solution to that a minute, and I'll get to that. But I would just like to say this. The present law does not restrict the industry from going out, getting an approval, and taking a top lift and moving on. There's none of those restrictions on us to do that. Matter of fact, all the law says in the Willamette Valley is that there's a depth. We have some depth limitations, but that's just to determine if it's significant. How we mine it is totally different, because the state and the counties will come in, and the state will say, we want to limit the depth because of various environmental issues, including things like groundwater protection. The county may even come in and say, we want to limit depth because we want a certain reclamation post-mining use of this property be restored. But in any event, after you go through that whole process, the industry is going to mine it to its fullest extent that the government allows us to do it. And if we were out just kind of creaming the aggregates out there and then moving on, basically wasting lots of farmland for very little aggregate, there would have been examples that would have come into this legislature demonstrating that. And there hasn't, because it doesn't make good business sense. We wouldn't do that. This is too much of a headache for us. So there's a bit of a level of trust on that issue, and I've been open to trying to find a clear and objective standard that would ensure folks being good businessmen. And one of the proposals that's out there is we wish the committee, when they vote on this, would trust the industry that this issue, that we move the version, the next iteration of the Dash 7s, and put that particular discussion into the interim. We would be willing to take out the reclamation piece. That means that one of the exceptions for Class 1 and 2 is if we reclaim it, and take that out of the Dash 7s and move that discussion into the interim, so we could fight for it to get back, and the other side would fight that there has to be one of these clear objective standards that would say that we wouldn't waste aggregates. They'd have to fight to find something to put in. So there's a little bit of give and take there. The other issue is the issue Mr. Schlack raised, and I think that does have a lot of promise. This is a very contentious issue that I'm very worried about taking to the industry, but I've made the commitment at least last night and this morning that I would fight for this, and it would be a little bit of a problem with, I think, some of the members of the committee, or at least one of the members of the committee, and that would be that there would be no, you could only, in the valley, greater than 35%, that you could only mine, you can only use the Goal 5 process for those significant sites over Class 1 and 2 soils over 35%. And that means, essentially, there would be no CUP process available, conditional use process available in the valley.
Rich, what the industry would like is the option on the significant sites?
We would, and by agreeing to that, we would be saying there would be no option. It would be a two-year. It would be a two-year deal. The nice thing. Let me just back up and say the nice thing about the CUP process is, both Goal 5 and CUP process are, in this way, are forms of dispute resolution. Goal 5 is a very hard-driven, objective process. When it's very contentious, it provides a very strong roadmap for the counties to follow to lead to whether or not a site's going to be approved or not denied. The CUP process is highly discretionary. There isn't necessarily a process defined. The counties have great latitude on conditions and what they want to see. But its flexibility allows for operators and community residents around the area to reach a consensus, where the Goal 5 process really does not allow that. It's pretty much a litigation approach. The CUP process, as an example, allows farmers and the aggregate industry to sit down and say, how can we do this in a way that works for all of us? And there are examples where that's worked. And we don't think it's broke, and we don't think it needs to be fixed, that process. And it has great advantage to keeping the temperature down on aggregate siting statewide. But it's one of those issues that the other side feels very strongly that it opens the door to too much aggregate or farmland being disturbed by the aggregate industry. And so what Art's proposal was there is that we not be allowed to use that for a two-year period of time. At that period of time, the Section 5 would then come into play. What that would mean is that for 2 years, my folks would not have that available to them, and the work group would continue working on that particular process issue. And I know that's not a popular issue with some of the members of the committee, but I would, if I could get a commitment on that, I certainly would push that issue hard and try to get, that really is a movement to the center that nobody's going to like, but and I can tell you that my board's not going to like it, but I think it moves the issue, on. So that's how I kind of capture this issue. On that issue, neither side's going to like it. I know that. We are supportive of the same goal. We have a different way of approaching that, and we wish the farm members and the environmental interests would say, you know, on this one, we think that the market forces, and we're going to trust the industry on that, but I'm not sure that's necessarily going to happen given how the discussions have been going. The other issue, just to answer two questions that were raised that I think I'm in the best position to answer with the chair's permission, on both the Schaffler and Senator Shields' question. The cost of production of quarry and alluvial aggregates is a bit variable. I think it's important to remember the most important cost, the most significant cost of producing aggregate in the state is the transportation. It's far more than the cost of producing aggregate. And in fact, the larger the site, the lower the cost of production, because those tend to be fixed costs because you work in the siding and the equipment and all that, and you spread it out over a larger volume of aggregates. So the size of the site has a substantial part of plays a substantial part of the cost of production. But still, the number one cost to us is transporting aggregates off-site to the job site. And it's amazing that that's our number one cost associated with production, but that's the way it is. For basalt formations, it's a little different because you have to drill and blast, and with that comes a certain amount of cost. And what you end up with is big chunks of rock that takes a whole different type of big and little chunks of rock that take a whole different type of crushers to handle and process those larger rocks, because when you blast, you're not going to have nice little rubble. You're going to have rocks that are this big down to this big, and so there's different costs associated with those two issues. On alluvial sites, if it's unconsolidated, you could literally have somebody go down with a front end loader and scoop it up and put it into the material separators, you know, the sand separators and different size aggregate separators, and then some of it goes off to a different crusher. It could be as easy as that. Or just because the nature of this, the material, that it can be consolidated, which is means it's highly cemented, that we literally have to go down and dig it with a track hoe. And I've actually witnessed both, and I've watched track hoes dig with such force that the material is so cemented that the excavator is literally smoking. It's popping and breaking the rocks as it's moving, and then we have a way of just scrubbing it all up and crushing it down and separating it out that works. That has a higher cost associated with it. Then sometimes the county will say, we don't want you to dewater a site because of groundwater issues. We want you to mine it, the alluvial sites, underwater. And that carries with it, with like the Morris Brothers site that we went out and saw, has a dredging operation that's little floating out there that goes down with a clamshell dredge. And as you know, that costs several million dollars to purchase that. And that was an additional cost. Instead of looking at it from the side of how much material or how you have to look at it from the size of things. Operators, when they're all competing with one another, are figuring out what their price is per unit material, and what they can expand on is their distance to market. But the other side is how much material, what size site they have. And they can afford to buy and have more expensive processing units and things of that nature if they can get a large enough area to reduce the margin down to where it works. So in the competition that happens, that's what the operators are doing. But I think for the important part for this committee the issue really is the transportation costs and trying to keep sites close enough to market where we're not shipping stuff from British Columbia and from Washington and elsewhere. Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, on your question on farmland consumption, the industry believes that we are, I know Mr. Rindy testified that we were at the bottom one or bottom two of farmland consumption in the state on our last hearing. The industry believes that we are a very, very, very small portion of the problem of farmland loss in the state. The statistics that you have are from the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries and from DLCD. And if you take all the aggregate sites, quarry and alluvial, because we weren't able to separate them, and you compare that with the amount of farmland, you still come up with that tiny percent. If you took off all of those quarries and you took off all those things that are not on Class 1 or 2, you're going to even have a smaller universe that we were not able to separate out at this particular point. One thing that Thousand Friends and I do agree on, and I believe Carrie from Thousand Friends and myself are going to be talking to Ogami about doing a better survey of their members when they do their permit application, so we got a better data stream coming in on that. And we outlined some things we both agreed on yesterday to provide a better data to really hone in on that issue. But assuming the worst-case scenario, that's the statistic that comes out, including everything, assuming everything is Class 1 soils and 2 soils. So certainly the picture that we received from our data is different. Now, I think I would be remiss if I said that we got that material. We worked with Dogami and DLCD to get it. Carrie from Thousand Friends came to an opposite conclusion from statistics she got from the Department of Land Conservation and Development, and she looked at it from farmland for the whole state. I think that the problem is the data needs to be honed in, but the industry and certainly DLCD believe, from what I can tell, that it's a very, very, very small part to have such a large argument over.
Any questions of Mr. Hagstrom? Donna, just come back to you for a moment. It's obvious from the testimony of all three that the Beaver State issue seems to be and always has been the primary interest of this committee. Do you believe that there is room to find an agreement if given more time?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd have to say yes. I mean, there's always that possibility. How much time? I don't know. The Beaver State issue, as it has developed, as the bill was introduced, it provided that you get rid of a list requirement, which would have allowed unlimited mining on our best farmland. The Senate version then said, no, we aren't going to get rid of the list. We're going to create two lists. Well, there's already one list. We're going to create a second list. So you got a list for significant resource sites, and then you got a list for those that aren't significant. Well, all farmland falls in one of those two categories, so that wasn't any improvement. You still could mine all the farmland. The issue comes back to how do we limit that? What percent, I mean, who is using, I mean, the question that kind of occurred to me while Mr. Angstrom was talking, who is using the most Class 1 and Class 2 farmland in an EFU zone? What's that percentage? I don't know. But I would suggest that the aggregate industry is, of course, one of the major users of Class 1 and Class 2 land in the EFU zone. And so that is of concern to us. Mentioned cost of transportation. There's train loads of rock going out of Marion County up into Multnomah County. Mr. Representative Schaffler mentioned rock coming in. Transportation must not be too much of an impediment if they're able to ship it down here.
I think one of the problems there, Don, is not so much the availability of the transportation, but the cost to the taxpayers and the people of Oregon at having to go outside the state to get a natural resource that we have available to us in the state.
But, Mr. Chairman, I don't know the particulars of this at all, but for whatever reason, whoever is purchasing that aggregate can purchase it cheaper from that source than they can from the in-state source. I don't know what the reason for that is, but we'll leave that on the table there. Just one final comment. I'd say ODOT, now we have the -6 amendments as Farm Bureau's proposal, and that provided for high-value farmland, and again, we've reduced our commitment there from high value to prime unique class 1 and class 2, which would be protecting less land than we would under the definition of high value. ODOT has said that they can work within that proposal as well. So I just want to put that on the record.
Thank you. Any questions of any of our three panel members?
I did have a question that I was thinking about and wrote down. When Rich was talking, Rich, you said, you talked about the problems with Goal 5. And Mr. Chairman, I want to say this to you. I see what they tentatively agreed to last night and this morning is very significant, and I want to thank you. That's progress in terms of compromise. That's very significant. And then after you said Goal 5 would be the only thing available for that interim period, you got me to thinking, what would you do to fix Goal 5? I've heard everybody from Bob Rindy to you say Goal 5 doesn't work. What are some of the things you'd have to do with Goal 5?
Oh, boy.
Well, I don't want an hour-long treatise. So
it could be an hour-long.
Headlines?
Yeah, headlines. Let me just say, Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, the biggest issue from my side of it is that we have created a situation. There's a lot of technical problems with Goal 5 that just need to be cleaned up. We've known about it for a long, long time. Things that we agreed on that weren't written in a way that that are causing trouble, like what we're facing with these particular cases. But this is the biggest problem with Goal 5. It has turned siting aggregate in this state into one of the worst experiences any local government, any operator, and any community could possibly want to go through. It has become the worst form of dispute resolution in this state. I have witnessed great men in our industry who are considered statesmen in their community, are involved with every aspect of the community life and the community development, vilified and demonized because they're trying to fight for new aggregate resources. And the biggest failure of Goal 5 is how we are handling siting aggregate and making it so adversarial that everybody walks away not only unhappy, but mortal enemies, and it's tearing communities up. It's hurting the reputation of the industry, and worst of all, from my side of it, is that people that really are committed to building strong communities and providing good aggregates for roads and building homes, it's just tearing them up. I mean, they're not well. I mean, it's changing how they're viewed and respected in the community. So from my side of it, is the biggest problem with Goal 5 is what is happening, what the collateral consequences of it are, and we got to find a better system that to resolve these issues. And as long as we make it the siting decision like this, an adversarial decision, it's just going to get worse. And that's just wrong. It's wrong to the neighbors to put them through that. It's wrong to the industry to put them through that. And it's wrong to the community to have them go through that. And you've heard the industry is very interested and thinks that the solution is to move this to the state and get it into a more neutral process for a more objective and more neutral process. The counties absolutely, from my understanding, now have a position against that. And I know talking with Mr. Slack here that his interest is let's see if we can fix it. We can make it a system that does work, that does reduce the tensions and does fix the problems. And so we're on a little different plane of trying to fix it, how to do it. But that's what the interim committee, I think, is going to tackle. And I think we need to be open to that part of it. The technical fixes I don't think are as much responsible for the contention, but just the process itself. So if I was trying to capture it globally, Chair Girard, Senator Shields, that's the way I would probably phrase it.
Well, what's interesting is I appreciate your response, and it is more philosophical than I thought it would be, and that's great as far as I'm concerned, because that's where you get busy in negotiating. But you did refer to Art there and the counties, and so I guess that begs the obvious question: how would you fix Goal 5, Art? I mean, Rich has indicated that they would move to a more neutral and objective process, but that the counties wouldn't be very happy. What are you thinking?
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, I think we're mixing a little bit of apples and oranges when we just talk about Goal 5. Goal 5 is a process. It's a process to identify issues, to evaluate the social, economic consequences of those issues, and try and get you to a decision with respect to those, and hopefully you can mitigate those issues through that process. That process is quite complex to date, and many times the issues are not all identified at the front end. They wind up being identified sequentially as you go through the process, which is, I know, frustrating for the industry. And it's probably frustrating for other participants. So it's questions of how you can, in terms of the Goal 5 process, one, streamline the process. I think, two, ensure that the issues are identified early so that those can be addressed in a expedited manner. And you can look at the, options on the table. Many times we look at trying to mitigate the impacts 100%, and that's very difficult to do. And so you have definitely winners and losers in that. I think, when you look at trying to find mitigation measures, you're probably not going to get to 100% mitigation. And so we need to look at what is reasonable to be accomplished in that process. What I've talked about just now is talk about the Goal 5 and the Goal 5 process. It's not who does it. The other issue is who does it, that Mr. Angstrom has with the idea, should it move to the state or should it continue to be done locally. I would submit to you that whatever the process is, it should be the same, whether it's done by the local government or whether it's done by the state. And if the state is going to shortchange the consideration of these things, that's not in the public interest. That's not in the interest of Oregonians. And so that's where Mr. Angstrom and I disagree. I think it should be the same. And if you look at transferring the permit authority from local government to the state should be required whatever we come up with, to go through exactly the same process, procedure, analysis of issues that local government does today or as may be modified. And that's where we philosophically disagree.
Thank you. Any further questions? Gentlemen, the committee deeply appreciates the time and effort that all three of you have spent in trying to find an agreement to this issue. And we're going to have Mr. Shipley come up, but we may ask you to go into overtime on this issue if we feel it's close enough. Okay? But again, our deepest thanks to all three of you.
Thank you all.
Mr. Shipley. Committee, you remember that we asked Mr. Shipley to be a mediator for this panel. And he does have... In writing, what are his opinions? But I'll let him explain that since they're his opinions. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Chair Garrard. For the record, my name is Brian Shipley, and you've asked me to help coordinate the discussions among various parties in trying to reach an agreement on a bill. I can report that we are much closer than we were a week ago on agreement on a bill. We aren't much closer on what the right thing to do to balance aggregate and farmland throughout the state should be. What committee staff has just passed out to you is a description of the four major parts of the bill, and as you've heard so far, there is general agreement as to language that a majority of the members of the committee would vote for. On most of the issues in the bill, on the general statement of policy, on the makeup and charge of the interim task force, and on the Eugene sand and gravel issue. And to say there's general agreement that this is language that would be acceptable to the members of the committee, as Mr. Schellenberg indicated, they don't see, for instance, in the case of Eugene sand and gravel, that the bill needs to address it at all. I won't go into details about what's contained there, but I would certainly am always available to answer any specific questions either now or later as members of the committee are able to look at those. There isn't too much more that I can add to what you've already heard about the Beaver State issue. Clearly that is where we've got to focus if we want to come up with a bill for the committee to approve. I do want to make clear to the committee that there is universal agreement from Farm Bureau to OCAPA that sites that have been permitted throughout the state before today, whether they were CUP permits or they were Goal 5 permits or they were on Class 1 or 2 soils or they weren't on Class 1 or 2 soils, should continue to operate. All parties have agreed that people have operated under the understanding that their permits were good, and since the Beaver State decision, some permits have been called into question, even existing operations. And everybody agrees that there needs to be language in the bill, and there's agreement on how to do it. That was in the Senate version, that existing permits be determined to be good. So, clearly the sticking point is what to do on Class 1 and 2 soils, and just like some of the other issues that have come up during our discussions, probably there won't be a fundamental decision about the right way to deal with mining on Class 1 and 2 soils. That is an issue that one way or another is going to be referred to the task force. We have narrowed down the issues, though, to Class 1 and 2 soils that are where the site has greater than 35% of those soils. And it looks likely to me that the solution will be temporary pending what happens in the task force. I don't know if there are any other specific questions that you have about our progress.
Any questions of Mr. Shipley?
I'm impressed with the document you've given us. It breaks it down pretty well. I imagine there might be some people around the room that are looking at this and saying, what does this or that piece mean? But you have essentially said on the paper that a statement of policy. You have large agreement, interim task force. You have basic agreement. And three, Eugene Sand and Gravel, with the exception of Farm Bureau agreement. Is that what you're saying at this point?
There's agreement that that is the most limited way to and clearest way to address the issue in Eugene Sand and Gravel, to make sure that there will be an objective standard for permit applicants to meet, whether and what that language does, everyone agrees, creates a state standard that regulates a particular emission like noise or dust, the default, but preserves for the local government or the state government the opportunity to make a more specific standard for impacts on agricultural crops.
Okay, so number four is the issue before us. I would just comment that early this week, and I think all of you have seen it, I put out kind of a philosophy statement that I think made everybody mad. The Farm Bureau didn't like it. Thousand Friends doesn't like it. Aggregate didn't like it. So I don't know whether I was right or wrong, but it suggests some of what's in this document today, and I think I had a solution, at least my solution, to the Beaver State case, and I think it sounded to me, and maybe I'm wrong, that the aggregate folks moved a little bit in that direction. I would hope that people recognize that time's running out on us in this legislative session. Now, some people could argue that, heck, we're going to be here for Christmas. I hope not. But time's running out, and I think that this conference committee is kind of the ball game. We need to try to get to it in this conference committee, not thinking that we can punt and somebody else will solve it for us. And so I think that what I've seen this morning is that the three gentlemen have made pretty good presentations, and they've been working at it and made some significant progress, and I hope you'll give us till at least midweek to try and clear this up.
Representative Schaffler, any comments?
Nope.
Mr. Shipley, is it in your opinion that if we continued to keep this work group, to ask this work group to go a couple more days, that we have a better than 50% chance of findings? Boy, that's really, I'm showing my Nevada ties here. do you think agreement is possible?
Chair Girard,
I
would say probable. And I say that based on the fact that over the last week, we have very much, as you've seen here, focused everyone, narrowed down what the issues are. And as recently as 10 o'clock at night in a cell phone call, new ideas are to deal with this problem and get a bill are happening. I mean, as recently as a few minutes ago in testimony. So I think people that have been talking are committed, and I think that they're focused.
Committee have any other feelings in that regard or any other questions for Mr. Shipper? Thank you, Brian. Is there any other testimony that any committee member would like to have anyone present that we haven't heard?
Mr. Chairman, I know it's unfair of me to do this, but Dave Vantoff is here from the governor's office. And I know that they haven't been involved deeply lately. But Mr. Angstrom mentioned that the governor's office was okay, as I understand what Rich said, was okay with, I think it was Section 4 of the Dash 7s, which is the task force part. If clarification is necessary, I would like that clarification. If it's not necessary, we don't have to say anything. But I would like to say that at this point, we've had Farm Bureau aggregate the counties involved. And if it's possible, and given their heavy workload in the governor's office, if it's possible for Mr. Vantoff to maybe have a little more input, maybe that would help push us in the direction of resolution. I would respectfully ask if Dave might maybe react to that.
Mr. Vantoff, would you come forward, please? That'll teach you to walk into this committee.
No, he didn't walk in. He drug him. Let's be honest here.
Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Chair Girard. My name is Dave Vantoff. I'm the Governor's Natural Resource Policy Advisor, and I was warned to be careful about entering committee hearing rooms.
It's a deep hole.
A very deep hole. Thank you for the opportunity to come and talk to you. Chair Girard, Representative Shields, is there a specific question you want me to respond to? Or?
Well, your office was referenced when Mr. Angstrom said that the governor's office basically agreed with the Dash 7 Section 4, which was the task force, and I'm assuming that that's correct.
Chair Girard, Senator Shields, I'm at a bit of a disadvantage not having expected to be coming in to testify on this. And I'm not aware of, the governor's office definitely supports an interim task force and to try and work through these thorny issues and to try and come up with a system that works both for the ag industry and protects farmland. The specifics of how this task force is put together under Section 4, I have not commented on it. I'm not sure if other folks in the office have.
I think it's still in play. I mean, the nature of the task force, the membership of the task force, and so on.
Chair Gerard, Senator Shields, if I could just add, you know, we support the task force. I think we would like to see it be a group of folks that are going to have the ability to work through the issues and have enough diversity and balance that there's legitimacy to at least the perception of legitimacy to the what they're putting together and working on. If we haven't commented in terms of whether it would just, I believe it's the Section 4 talks about legislators comprising the task force.
Well, I think that's an older iteration of it. We've talked more recently about a much more diverse group, you might say, of stakeholders and interested parties and communities out there. The other thing that I was asking the chair and kind of should be asking you, I would like to ask you if it's possible. I think Rich and Don and Art have done some good work with Brian. If it's possible, given your time frame, is it possible for you maybe to have some input into that process? It looks like we're going to keep trying to work on this for another half of a week or so. Is it possible that maybe the governor's office could help us moving in the direction of a compromise? I think we need to have this. I mean, let me ramble a little farther and say that earlier this month we had asked the question of, do you need this aggregate bill, you know, and we've never had an official answer. I've heard rough draft answers that were both yes and no from different parts of state government. And so without that clear definitive answer, I would like to respectfully ask the chairman and you if you would consider being part of this little working group, because we need somehow to move us toward resolution of the problem or compromise. We don't want to blow the bill up just yet, I would think.
Yeah, Chair Senator Shields, I would be, if asked, I'd be happy to try and help.
Raise your right hand, David. Let's swear you in. You're now a member of that work group.
Ex officio.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And we appreciate you volunteering.
You've never quite volunteered somebody so well.
Thank you, Dave. Did you have any comment to any of the senator's comments?
Chair Gerard, I would just add, it sounds like I was listening to some of the testimony this morning in terms of what the work group or the group had been able to reach agreement on, and it sounds like there is some areas where most people are in agreement, for instance, that there is a need to have the CUP process available again for, at least generally speaking, in the state for small operators and for agencies purposes, and that the main disagreement seems to be about just how do you deal with the class 1 and 2 soils. And so the governor's office would be helpful. We could find some solution that would at least get us over the hump with respect to the majority of those sites, and that hopefully we'd also be able to, you know, carve out and find some kind of agreement on the sites where there is contention. But we would be hopeful that we could have some kind of a bill come forward that would open up the conditional use process generally, outside the valley and for the smaller sites, which prior to the Beaver State case had been available. That doesn't seem to be very contentious, and the contentious issue seems to be around how we're going to deal with class 1 2 soil problems. So.
Thank you, Dave. Any questions? Thank you very much. We appreciate, again, your help.
Thank you.
While I am certainly pleased at the progress that our work group made, I have to express my disappointment that we don't have agreement this morning to move this process onward, but I am, unless there is an objection from the committee, I would like to extend the time period to work on this, because I believe that all of the parties are very sincere and are working to find something. It's always hard gone with your group because you have nothing to win and only something to lose. And it's hard to negotiate with anyone who's in that position. And we appreciate the fact that you're here talking with us and remaining open-minded. So without hearing an objection, we shall continue. Mr. Shipley, if you will continue to shepherd our group for a couple more days, and we're very appreciative of Mr. Vantoff also joining that group. We will set our next meeting for 9 a.m. Wednesday morning. That'll be August 20th, at which time we will ask the group to come back, hopefully have had reached an agreement. If not at that time, the chair will take what it feels is appropriate action at that time. We will therefore adjourn this conference committee on House Bill 3013.